matter of Thomas Espinosa. May we please have appearances?
Justice and Associate Justices Amanda Figlin, Assistant Ethics Counsel, Office of Attorney.
Good morning, Justice. I am Thomas Espinosa, the respondent.
Good morning, counsel, and welcome. Ms. Figlin, please go ahead.
May it please the court, this matter involved respondent's representation of 99 clients for over 3 years in two separately filed but nearly identical matters seeking relief under the RICO statute in New York federal court against trustees of residential mortgage-backed securitization trusts. The special ethics master found that respondent violated 23 RPCs and recommended a 2-year suspension from practice. The 6 members of the disciplinary review board who decided this matter agreed that respondent engaged in 29 instances of misconduct involving 22 rules of professional conduct as alleged in the OE's complaint at counts 1, 3, 4, 5, and 7. The members of the board disagreed as to whether respondent engaged in knowing misappropriation pursuant to RPC 1.15A and In re Wilson and related violations of RPC 8.4B and 8.4C as alleged in count 2 of the OE's complaint. 3 members of the board believed that the OAE had not met its burden of proof as to knowing misappropriation and recommended a 3-year suspension from practice for respondent's overall misconduct. And 3 members of the board found that respondent did engage in knowing misappropriation and recommended disbarment. Although the board split on knowing misappropriation, all members of the board agree that respondent engaged in serious ethics violations, including fee overreaching, multiple conflicts of interest, and improper fee-sharing arrangements with a non-lawyer. The OAE recommends that the court disbar respondent for knowing misappropriation related to his acquisition of a computer system with client funds without the authorization of those clients. However, if the court does not find that respondent engaged in knowing misappropriation, the OAE agrees with the recommendation of the board that respondent should be suspended from practice for 3 years. This RICO litigation and the eventual disciplinary matter arose out of the professional relationship between respondent and non-lawyer Tyson Taylor, who met in 2012 and agreed to form a litigation group. Taylor had a background in mortgage loans, and he had been a member of a networking group of homeowners who had for many years been seeking to save their homes, which were either in default or in foreclosure. Pursuant to a formal service agreement Taylor signed with respondent in August 2012, and consistent with the terms of the retainer agreements prepared by respondent for his potential clients, Taylor was to attempt to build a group of plaintiffs for the RICO case. He would provide copies of retention agreements to clients and handle the retention of clients, receive the monthly payments from the clients, document what funds were received, answer the client's questions, tell respondent about concerns raised by the clients, and set up occasional informational meetings for respondent and the clients to discuss the strategy and the status of the case. In exchange for these services, Taylor was to receive half of the administrative fees identified in the retainer agreements. This was $40 every month from each client who paid his or her monthly fees. In addition to these services, Taylor served as respondent's paralegal on the RICO matter, performing research, communicating with possible experts, and handling whatever was needed for the litigation. He was paid for his service on an hourly basis from the litigation funds by respondent. Taylor was also one of the clients in the first RICO matter. And Taylor and respondent also formed a company called Sophia Metrics, which set up a means for third-party investors to pay the monthly fees of the homeowners who qualified and wanted to be part of the RICO litigation, but could not afford to pay the monthly fees. The investors would share in the net recovery with the clients. Pursuant to the retainer agreements, the clients paid a non-refundable intake fee to Taylor, which ranged from $1,000 to $5,000, so that Taylor could research their loan records and see if the clients qualified to be in the litigation. Clients also paid a monthly fee of $500 to $600 a month. The retainer agreements notified the clients that if they missed just one single monthly payment, they could be dropped from the litigation. And if they were dropped, any funds that they had already paid in would be forfeited. The retainer agreements gave discretion to respondent to decide how to spend the litigation funds, but did not require respondent to produce billing records or accountings to the clients. Respondent's legal fees were contingent on the outcome of the litigation. The knowing misappropriation claim in count two of the OA's complaint alleges that on April 11, 2013, respondent wrote a check from the attorney trust account he had created for the RICO matter and paid $14,118.45 to a vendor to acquire a new computer system for his office. At the time he wrote that check, he was holding client funds, which had been paid in by 33 clients and which were to be used for litigation expenses. This knowing misappropriation charge is unique because it involves the alleged misappropriation of, quote, client funds held in the litigation fund and trust on behalf of multiple clients in furtherance of a common legal objective. That's how the board phrased it. The board disagreed with the special ethics master that the monthly payments made by clients were retainers or cost retainers, which respondent could use for any purpose. Although the board members agreed that the litigation funds held by respondent in the specially created RICO attorney trust account were client funds, which could be misappropriated, three members of the board found that the OAE did not meet its burden of proof. And these members stated that, quote, the conflicting, evolving, and contradictory testimony spanning 22 days left those members unable to conclude that respondent's use of funds was unauthorized, end quote. The three members of the board who found knowing misappropriation comprehensively reviewed the evidence, including all allegations which were raised by respondent and his wife, Veronica Espinoza, for the first time at the disciplinary hearing. These new claims included an alleged December 28, 2012 statement by Taylor to respondent and Veronica Espinoza that the clients could use 30,000 of the client's funds to acquire a computer system. The other major new claims advanced by Veronica Espinoza and respondent for the first time at the disciplinary hearing was that respondent had had four conference calls with clients before purchasing the computer system. All of the clients had attended the calls, and all clients in those calls had expressly authorized respondent to use their funds to buy a new computer system. The board members analyzed the credibility concerns in this matter and noted that the revised claims raised by respondent and his wife at the hearing were not consistent with other statements previously made by respondent, were not consistent with the language of the agreements between respondent and his clients, were contradicted by Taylor's testimony, and were contradicted by the testimony of the three clients of RICO One who testified at the hearing. These board members found that respondent did not have authorization of the clients to acquire the system because there was no credible evidence that the 33 clients expressly authorized respondent to use the client funds to buy the computer. No language in the signed client retainer agreements authorized respondent to use client funds for this purpose. The 33 clients did not give consent to the liaison Taylor to let respondent use their funds to buy a computer system. The clients did not know until September 2015 that their funds had been used by respondent to buy the computer system. Taylor denied that he had spoken to each of the 33 clients to obtain permission for respondent to take or borrow funds from the RICO attorney trust account before April 11, 2013. Taylor encouraged respondent to buy a new computer system, but this is not the same thing as formally authorizing respondent to use client funds to acquire the system. Respondent did not have a reasonable belief that Taylor authorized him to buy a new system with client funds because Taylor did not have a power of attorney or proxy pursuant to the service agreement he signed with respondent, nor in the client retainer agreements, which would give him the power to make decision on behalf of the clients. Moreover, respondent never questioned Taylor to confirm that respondent had verbal authorization from all 33 clients or any authorization in writing from those clients, which would give respondent authorization to buy the system with litigation funds. All of the RICO clients were legitimately angry when they found out 3 years into the litigation that respondent had paid his wife $49,000 for over $49,000 for alleged paralegal fees, that respondent had acquired a computer system for his office, and that $80 had been taken from each client payment every month for administrative fees, yet clients had also paid for copies, copy paper, toner, copy machine repairs, and respondent's admission to the Second Circuit, along with other overhead expenses. In the board's words, respondent engaged in rampant dishonesty, which persisted for the entire time he represented these clients. Clients were harmed here since respondent and Taylor took significant sums of money from clients who were already in distressed circumstances. Client Colleen Dwyer paid about $8,000 net into the RICO litigation and $2,000 to Taylor as an intake fee. Clients Art and Judy Groveman paid $14,600 into the RICO litigation and $3,000 to Taylor as intake fees. In mitigation, respondent, who has practiced for 40 years, has no prior discipline. In aggravation, respondent engaged in grossly unprofessional behavior during the disciplinary hearing and has failed to recognize the gravity of his misconduct. The OAE recommends that respondent be disbarred for knowing misappropriation.
You're welcome to adjust the podium in front of you. There's a switch toward the front. You can elevate it if you like. Can you tell us the total amount of fees that respondent obtained over the course of this?
The total, well, I guess it varies in part. The total amount that clients paid or the total amount he received?
You can do it both ways.
Okay, so the total amount the clients paid into the litigation fund was about $600,000. Mr. Espinoza received $41,411 as monthly administrative fees. That's from the $40 per month from every client for payments received. And then the computer system was worth $14,118. And then there was kind of miscellaneous extra expenses that are the $8,450 for invoiced expenses. That's OAE Exhibit 25 and 25A. And I believe he received fees for filing the declaratory judgment action against the California group, $1,499. So that's approximately $65,479 that Mr. Espinoza received. And Mrs. Espinoza received $49,600 as paralegal fees.
Where did the rest of the $600,000 go?
There was a settlement paid to the declaratory judgment defendants. So $45,920 went as settlement. $48,300 went to experts and miscellaneous expenses, including like guaranteed subpoena filing fees. And then Mr. Taylor, through his HCA, received $169,014.73 for litigation support and reimbursement for travel expenses, and I believe also like a conference in Atlantic City that they had with some experts. And then $234,000 was returned once the litigation, once the power of attorneys were signed by the remaining RICO clients in favor of Taylor. And so then Taylor then allocated or refunded a lot of those funds to the clients. So again, when I talked about Ms. Dwyer, she paid in more money than that because she had been in the litigation since the inception. So she did get a partial refund.
Questions, anyone? Anything you'd like to add?
That's it.
The OAE's position is?
Disbarment.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Espinoza.
Yes.
With 39 years of practice, two times service in the District 6 Ethics Committee, I find myself here in front of you. And by the way, it's 39 years of practice that I had in both jurisdictions, New York and New Jersey, with no discipline. Not only that, in a practice that have been dedicated mainly to poor people, and I have served with not becoming rich on any in any event, not even having a situation of income that I could have an attorney to represent me in this proceeding. Tomorrow, I'm going to be 76 years old, although on my papers, I appear being be 76 years in November. I was born tomorrow in a date similar to tomorrow. And that I was declared as a son of my parents at the date of the birthday of my mom. I did not misappropriate anything. And every use of the money that I use was used with authorization. I direct you to that agreement in which there might be matters that can be interpreted and were interpreted as not being, I say, kosher. But okay, at the time it was negotiated with Mr. Taylor and through him with all of the members. Let me explain who was Mr. Taylor. Mr. Taylor was not someone that was just a member of the group and that they decided to have him as a liaison. Mr. Taylor found the group. He showed me and my wife 1,800 people that he had in his computer and then stated clearly that what he wants was a zoo in New York. That will narrow his 1,800 to the fact that they have to be suing people that banks that were trust in New York, and there will be a strict diversity because he was in federal court. He not only that, he was also the attorney in fact, and that was memorialized and made so at the time in which there was the agreement by which all of the money that was in the account went to the, with the exception of the one that was that under the agreement forfeited. Mr. Tyson Taylor or Ty Christie was not only just a liaison, he was also the conveyor by the agreement of every order, every desire, and every decision made by the group.
You've described him as an attorney in fact. He was not an attorney, is that correct?
No, he was not. When I say an attorney in fact, I am talking about a power of attorney in the sense of representing. When we had the substitution of me by Eric Jackson, that was coming and they decided not to continue with me. Then I said to them, the agreement doesn't say that you can convey to me that information or as a decision. And I need from the members that they agree with that. And he was named a attorney in fact with the power of attorney that permitted to do so. And with the, and stating that they have no claims with respect to the use of the money in the account. By the way, I will address if I am allowed the nature as the special master characterized the agreement and the type of retainer that I have.
I just want to give you some guidance at the outset, Mr. Espinosa. You'll have a half hour to use as you see fit, and please proceed.
Okay, thank you. The fact of the matter is that we, having this group and some of the group that was waiting to see if they really were part, could be brought into the suit, but they were already part of the group by meeting the two conditions. One, that they were suing the trust in New York that were New York trust. And second, they had a strict diversity. What we've been waiting for, the others would go and proceed. And that is the reason why they were divided in RICO 1 and RICO 2. Because of the number of people, it was through him negotiate, and also in telephone conference, By the way, he was the only one who recorded them and didn't record all of them. It was decided that he would be placed in the agreement. He would be the only way that they will convey decision to me, although it was preserved that they could call me individually if there was a problem. So during the whole litigation, every decision with respect to expert and so on, despite the fact that it was according to the agreement, that it was according to what I considered to be fit, nevertheless, it was observed that every step was, as a matter of fact, the expert will convey to him, convey to me, and he would make a selection and of people that are on the basis of what I stated that was needed, and then I will make this selection. Everything, as a matter of fact, my fam, which by the way, the people that testify out of the same group that also were together within the decisions of the suit that were done by the California group. And they were, I learned during the process, that they were also the people that even work within the HCA. My firm said, I know that the computer was discussed. She didn't say anything about the discussion, but I am uncertain if it was before or after the computer was purchased. Our government stated, oh, I only was concerned about a duplication because the computer was already purchased. The deceased, and my fan said, everything is conveyed through Tyson. And if not so, what for is the liaison? It will be a waste, practically. And the same thing was said by Colleen Dwyer, that during testimony, she stated that that agreement of service gave me too much power because I could make decision as it was, as I found fit. I will address that. Tyson Taylor, when I visited in Halifax, because I went to his home, and I remember we had a dinner in the afternoon, said clearly, these people have, the group has separated $30,000. By the way, it was much more less than the $30,000 what the computer was purchased. For the purchase of the computer, because what you have is not good. It cannot do the work that we need to be done in the two suits. And that was confirmed on January on a telephone conference that I had with the member. It was confirmed during the conference of the 41 minute in my house that my wife heard, because it had to be in the telephone of my house and not in the cell phone. And it was in a speaker phone. In that one, I even said the following, you can purchase it and I can give you back the computer. But it was decided that it was better that I acquired the computer, and what was stated there was that the $40 will be used for the purpose of I acquiring the computer. A computer that was acquired under the statement allow me. A computer that was acquired for the group. It was not a computer that was acquired for me. It was acquired for the purpose of the work of the group. And it was decided that I should acquire it and not to give them back.
Who made that decision? You're using passive voice. It was decided.
It was in the conference in which all of the members were there. And that the conference that that matter are the conference that go from January up to April 10th.
When you say all of the members, who are you referring to?
I am talking the members of the group one and of the group two. At that time, it was only the members of the group one and part of the group two.
I just want to clarify, you're talking about your clients?
I am talking about the clients that were members of the group and that have already signed an agreement with me, the service agreement, which is in part retainer, but service agreement at the same time. And a retainer not only on contingency, but also the payment for other interventions that I would make in favor of local council by I collecting fees.
There's a dispute as to whether your clients authorized that. Is that correct?
Well, no. There is a dispute with respect to that, but a dispute, I don't know how, because they said in testimony that the vehicle was Mr. Tyson Taylor.
But didn't Mr. Taylor testify that he never told you that the plaintiffs agreed to the purchase of the computer system, and he had no idea that you would use the funds from the trust account to purchase the computer system?
Yes, but he testified that in a convoluted way, and I will explain.
I'm looking at a portion of the testimony right now. But did you ever speak with plaintiffs in the RICO lawsuit about the fact that respondent was about to purchase a computer system? No.
Yeah, he said that. But when he was talking to Mr. Ging and to the people that interviewed him, said, we decided to gift him the computer and then back off. It appears that when everything now was not we didn't win. Now he had trouble with his own group. And now he wanted to point me as being the culprit. And that is not true. By the way, that is the reason why the special counsel said they are totally unbelievable. Why they are not, they were not believable. They were not believable because there was the contradiction that they say that there was a meeting, but they don't go into the details of the meeting. And it was unbelievable also him in respect to that, because that affirmation was not just made with me alone. He made it in front of Veronica, in front of Ralph Montague, and in front of Simon Saru, that were in my office. And then all of the statement by him about the computer system that we had not to be able to do the things. And that's the reason why special matters master said it's a waste, because they are in his pocket. Practically, he didn't use that word, but they are in his pocket. And they were in his pocket. It's very interesting. During all of those 3 years, there was, despite the fact of the computer being used and all of those things, and they knowing it, there was never a complaint with respect to it until we had a negative result in New York.
Let's take a step back. You described earlier in your comments Mr. Taylor's role. You said that he negotiated with clients, he conveyed information back and forth with clients, that he made decisions. Does that shield your professional obligations? Does that shield you as an attorney from your professional obligations in any way?
About the agreement?
About this entire operation.
Here is the problem. With respect to, we had not a class action. What we had was joint action of all of them. If I had, when I had to make a decision about something, to contact each one of them, that was the reason why this agreement was made in such a way that him, who was the one who formed everything, will be the one that will be conveying to me their decision. And the conference would do only the work either of confirming it or of clarifying what had been the result.
But to reiterate the chief's question, do you agree that you still have a responsibility beyond that to communicate directly with the clients, to make sure that they understand things, that responsibility still rests with you? Do you acknowledge
that was done in the conference? Because, by the way, the only conference that he recorded, okay, were, I believe, four, but they were conferences that occurred practically every month. And before the computer was paid, there were at least two or three conferences in January, and there were conferences on the 10th, on the 13th, on April, prior to the purchase of the computer. And further than that, okay, and by the way, and this that this conference, the computer was discussed, okay, although they don't recall exactly what the date was, confirmed by my firm that testified, and also by Colleen Dwyer. And all our government knew about it, but our government only was concerned with the duplication of purchasing. He believed that the 14,000 were being asked again or something of that nature, because I didn't ask him to clarify what he meant about duplication. But all of the witnesses with this, they speak clearly that there was the computer discussion, including the witness that there was that the OAE presented. What they didn't recall were unconveniently, as the special master said, they were in the pocket of Tyson, and the contradiction of Tyson between gifting me the computer, not reclamation later on with respect to the use of the money, and then once we had the problem, changing his tune.
What was the ultimate result of the litigation? You were removed as counsel, you said?
I was removed as counsel, and I had great difference with the counsel that was the one that substituted me. If you allow me, there was a difference between how he handled it, between him and I. I believe that the Erie Doctrine would have made us successful because the Court of Appeal of New York was in our side. And the Second Circuit simply didn't follow it. And unfortunately, there is the rule in New York of the panel rule, in which another panel cannot review that panel. And I wanted to challenge, because there are other jurisdictions that do not use it, the panel rule. The panel rule has been, the decision has not been, how can I say, been challengeable at all. And there were three things. One, the Court of Appeal decision. Two, the panel rule. Three, the EBIDOT. And I was, by the way, then they decided to go to the Court of Appeal of New York for an advisory decision with respect to my position that the Court of Appeal had decided in the issue in favor of my client. And actually, it was a client, because it was an advisory decision and not a decision with respect to the subject matter of the case that was not before the Court of Appeal. I have stated that the one that was there with respect to the credibility of the witness is the special master. And the special master did not believe them at all. and believe the witness that I present, including my testimony in respect to that. And that was Veronica Clark Montague. And by the way, the role of Tyson Taylor, apparently, things that I didn't know, was also corroborated by the testimony of Linda Zimmerman about what the experience that he had with other attorneys that I didn't know. But to say that Tyson Taylor was that Tyson Taylor was not, was just one more of the members that somehow the members agree during my interaction with them to put in their note. He was the foreman of the group. He was the leader of the group. He was the liaison. He was the person by whom the matters were conveyed to me. And it was agreed in that way because of the logistic of the case that would have made it almost impossible or very, very difficult to have a decision about a particular subject matter. Let me bring to the attention, this case did not have any problem of conflict between the clients. Because why? They all were against one and they had no claims against each other. And the reason why it was not a class action, it was because we wanted to negotiate if there was to be an agreement, okay, for each one of them separately, because their harms and their losses were much more different than what you will have in a class action in which more or less it is allocated practically on an equal basis. Now, with respect to the other matters, and if there is any other question with respect to this, I will answer. But I pocket money. I got no money except the payments of what was owed during the doing of the matters, which for which we presented bills and all of those things. Veronica Espinosa, she has 18 years of practice. She is an accountant, graduated in the university. She is my wife. She was on. She earned, paid by me, and can be checked with the income tax, $500 plus other plus expenses per week. She entered into and accepted the $1,600 that was authorized in the agreement. And that is less money than the amount that she would earn paid by me. And she was to dedicate herself with some other minor things that she did for me in other cases, totally and completely to me. She did 28 binders of research.
Mr. Espinosa, we're a little over 25 minutes into your presentation.
Okay.
I wanted to...
Your Honor, the only thing that I say is...
I had a question. We have an extensive record, much evidence, much testimony, a large amount of findings in the 185-page decision of the DRB. Can you tell us from your perspective, did you do anything wrong? And did you violate any ethics principles?
Well, I'll tell you one thing that I know. Okay. I will never have I have asked no suspension, naturally, no disbarment, no suspension Because the majority of the matters that are there are problems with respect to the retainer and how it was worded. And I have explained ad nauseam how and the document speak also about it by itself, including, which I agree with the special master, the characterization of it as a retainer in account of cost. And I have already in my petition explained why. Yes, I believe that, I'll tell you what I believe. First, I, being a single attorney, I tried to fight, being a true believer, tried to fight a case that required more than one attorney. We require a law firm, and I did that. Secondly, there were things that I did not go ahead and check. Let me give you an example. What was the history of Tyson Taylor? By the way, he was separate from me in the sense that he had a company, and that company was giving us service. The question is, doesn't it create a conflict in there? Well, at the time, I didn't believe that it created the conflict because he was only giving services, not with respect to decision in the case, but only services with respect to and approved by the other members about research and things of that nature. I would have, how can I say, should have been asked for a committee instead of one single person. Committee of four of them, five of them, or something of that nature, instead of one single person.
So these are judgment calls that you're discussing with us. Can you tell us, did you violate any ethics rules?
I believe I have said no when I was in the I have said no. I believe that there were problems with my account that were resolved because of lack of knowledge, that I thought that, yes, there may be, and those, if they are, which are in relation with the wording of the contract, or and with things that were done vis-a-vis Veronica reporting and things of that nature, yes, I believe, but I don't believe that it is it merit my disbarment, and I don't believe that it merit even a suspension. I believe that in the spectrum, and I leave that to this court, it could be an admonition, a reprimand, or a warning. And if it is raised to a suspension, not that amount of time, not even the 2 years. I'm talking about a very short period of time, although I do not believe that it merits suspension.
Does anyone have any questions? We're at a half hour now. Is there anything you'd like to add to wrap up your presentation?
Look, I have defended the poor. Am I going to take money from the poor? No way. Will I, in 39 years of practice, to have ever taken any money without authorization? No. Why this time? In one in which I did not pocket any money, and in one in which, unfortunately, I didn't win, and therefore the contingency didn't occur. I have no motivation to do it. I did not do it. And when I use the money, I use it for the purpose that was given to me in the agreement and with the authorization through the liaison that was established in the agreement and who was also the leader of the group. And I corroborated it by a series of conflicts, going from January of 2012 through April of 2013.
Mr. Espinoza, if given the opportunity, would you engage in another case with a liaison like Mr. Taylor in a different circumstance?
With Tyson Taylor, no.
With somebody else, would you allow somebody else to get involved in a case like that, who's a client and acting as a liaison, who'd be paid from the proceeds of the parties?
On second guess, everybody is wise. And I believe that...
I missed what you said. On second guess, what did you say?
Everyone is wise.
Everyone is wise.
It is very easy, not in the moment in which you are doing that, in which the consequences of being the concentration of the decisions of the client was into a person that, by the way, I had no reason why not to believe that he had all of the contact with them, because including, and that has not been in any of the record, including I was able to talk personally with the Vietnamese group that was the initial group that he had. And they treat him as practically as you will treat your father. What I will do, first of all, is to have a committee that will be named by the group. And that committee will receive the feedback and the decisions of them and convey it to me. By the way, it's interesting that that committee was created by Tyson for the litigations in federal court. And it was demanded for me when I wanted to have the return of the money. And what they did was to sign a power of attorney.
Mr. Espinosa, I'm sorry, I need to ask you to wrap up your argument.
Okay. I did not misappropriate any money. And the money that I used, it was authorized by the person that they name as the conveyor of your decisions. As a matter of fact, even when I had to convey them questions, it had to be through him. Second, I did not pocket any money of any kind of anyone, in the sense that they were service paid to people that did the work, and in the sense also that I did not collect not money even for the service that I give to local council. Yes, if this court has to discipline me, I am asking this court, naturally, no disbarment, I will put it to you in this way. My father, as he was advising me in life, said, the only thing that you cannot accept and not do is ignominy. That thing that goes against every principle in which I have been educated, the 613 principle of what I follow, which is the Torah. And all the others, they might be mistaken, and you face them. I am asking to this court, not this barment, and yes, I should, according to the findings, which were at the time matter of judgment, if you are going to discipline me, do not be in such a way that at my 76 years old, I have to put my face down because I have done something improper and unethical.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the matter under advisement. Court is in recess.
Can I direct persons to the record? Thank you. Very briefly.
Those minutes, these are yours. Just as to the issue as to whether Mr. Taylor was the power of attorney, Mr. Taylor was not formally power of attorney until October 2015. Those are OA exhibits 57A through 57E. Mr. Espinoza claimed that the clients who testified actually worked for Mr. Taylor. I would direct the court to OAE 39, which was the statement of my fam, and to January 22nd, 2020 testimony of clients and January 23rd, 2020 testimony of clients. And then finally, Mr. Espinoza claimed that the client, that the special ethics master found that the clients were in the pocket of Taylor. I direct the court to paragraph 20, I believe it's page 10 of the hearing report, where the special ethics master found that the clients didn't even find out about the computers until September 2015. Thank you.
May I make it more rebuttal to that one?
Yes, you may. As to those 3 points only, in a disbarment matter, the respondent always gets the last word.
Yes, it's true that it was later that he was named, but he had already made the decision of taking me out because he expressed it as coming from the members. And I requested from him that that will be placed in a document, and he came with the power of attorney. That's his one. With respect to the other one, okay, my fan stated what I said, stated that the computer were discussed, and the same thing calling out Dwyer. And both of them said about characterize the work of Tyson, of to what he was charged by them as being the conveyor of their wishes. If not, they said, what for was he a liaison?
Thank you. Court is in recess.